The refugee crisis is still dominating the news and the political agenda in Europe. European Union ministers are expected to approve a plan to relocate 120,000 refugees across the EU. At Stormont, MLAs have been calling for Northern Ireland to do its bit. An Assembly resolution passed yesterday called on the executive to make sure plans are in place to welcome Syrian refugees here. But not everyone believes large-scale relocation is a good idea. Let's talk to the SDLP MLA, Claire Hanna, who spoke in the Assembly debate yesterday. And the columnist, Julia Hartley-Brewer, is also on the line. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
I'll just start with you, Julia, because you have written a piece about why you feel that you wouldn't be prepared to accept a Syrian refugee family into your own home, an offer that an awful lot of people have made. Why do you feel that way?
Well, I wrote that piece when there was the outpouring of horror, quite understandably, at Elian, the little boy whose body had washed up on the beach in Greece after his family tried to take him from Turkey. And it seems to me that a lot of these offers, as lovely and well-meaning as they are from people who genuinely care, are, to a certain extent, more about our feelings, our consciences, our urge to do something, rather, just anything, something, rather than do nothing, and actually less about what really needs to be done to help these people. 10,500 Syrian children have died since 2011, been killed at the hands of Assad and his regime, or by ISIL. We need to tackle issues that are affecting all of those children and their families, and not just one little boy, which is what I want to say.
But state-based solutions, Julia, doesn't stop people from doing their bit, though, does it?
No, and it's lovely, and we live in a country that has a long history of taking in refugees, I understand. But the issue for me, though, is how many, realistically, do we propose to take? Now, even the Prime Minister's of Britain's suggestion, you know, of 20,000 over 4 or 5 years, many people say it doesn't even touch the size. Look, it doesn't touch the size of anything. We are talking about not tens of thousands, not even hundreds of thousands. We're talking millions. We're talking tens of millions of people who want to flee the area, Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, and also coming from Eritrea.
So would you much further are you worried, Julia, about the practicalities of inviting a family into someone's home? Like how realistically it would actually work?
Look, when people were being killed in Rwanda, we weren't offering our homes to people then who were fleeing persecution. People are fleeing persecution around the world. And I don't understand why suddenly, as a result of a picture of a little boy a couple of weeks ago, that people suddenly are thinking, oh, now we need to help. What we need to do is take the action that needs to be taken, and I'm afraid it is going to be military, to actually make sure that Syria is a safe place for people to live. Yeah. We need to tackle ISIL, we need to tackle Assad. And offering a few thousand people of your spare bedroom, and by the way, the local government association has pointed out that we're not talking about a few weeks or months, we're talking about 5-year waiting lists for these people to get housing.
Okay, I just want to bring in, sorry to speak across you, Julia, but I want to bring in Claire here. Is that the attitude you're hearing, Claire? Would you be prepared to take a refugee family into your own home?
Well, I think the first thing is what we were trying to discuss yesterday was the practicalities, and it's not actually about, and I agree with your other speaker on one, it's not about taking people into homes, it is about...
So that's something you wouldn't be prepared to do yourself?
It's not that I wouldn't be prepared to, it's about finding a more of a pathway, it's about each refugee or asylum seeker not having to reinvent the wheel when they get here and having more dignity than being put in people's spare bedrooms and having a longer term plan so that people can access the social and economic services they need to properly integrate here, the legal advice, getting children into schools and things like that. So that's the detail that we want to talk about. Firstly, just to address, and we had aid agencies up here yesterday who backed this up, the very, very vast majority of people displaced by this conflict remain in Syria or in the countries bordering Syria, and they want to stay there. People don't want to have to walk across.
Yeah, no, very much so. But just to turn the focus back to here, does the executive have a plan for when refugees arrive here? What happens? What's in place? How can they claim asylum? Is there English lessons, perhaps, if they need them? Is there anything organised?
No, it doesn't. And I believe there is some work going on. That was something that I and others were trying to highlight.
So there's nothing in place on behalf of the executive for refugees arriving in Northern Ireland?
As far as I'm aware, there isn't a refugee integration strategy as would be in place, for example, across the border.
Does that worry
Scotland,
you?
Yes, it does worry me. And I know Scotland have established a task force that will look at all these fine details so that it doesn't come down to putting people in church halls and spare rooms. So we have made a forum of people currently dealing with refugee and asylum seekers have produced a comprehensive list of very doable actions for the executive. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to communicate those yesterday. And those are things like making sure people have access to legal advice, making sure
But time could overtake you, couldn't it, Claire? Because there's not a huge amount of action happening at the executive at the moment, and the refugees could be arriving here very soon.
Well, I don't think they'll be arriving quite as soon as that, but that's exactly what we were trying to make the point yesterday. It isn't just good enough for politicians to go out and kind of wring their hands and get into an auction of how many people we should or shouldn't take here. It is time for action, and we made that quite clear yesterday that it is time for a refugee integration strategy that does things like make sure that people don't have to fight to get access to English lessons, they don't have to fight to get access to benefits. And I think that those are very doable actions. Some of the bigger picture things, like solving the crisis in the Middle East and indeed putting a number on the amount of people who will come to the UK and will come to Northern Ireland, aren't within the gift of the Northern Ireland Assembly.
Is it known at this point, Claire, is it known at this point how many refugees will possibly come to Northern Ireland?
No, it isn't. As you may be aware, David Cameron has talked about a figure of 20,000 over 5 years, which would be fewer than 800 here over that period. But I do believe that events have probably overtaken that and the crisis has increased in its scale since then. So, no, that figure isn't something that's known to us. But what we do know, Elaine, is that there are refugees and asylum seekers currently who are having difficulty here. And in the context of such a clear demonstration of goodwill and solidarity for people here, it's unthinkable that there are Syrians currently in Northern Ireland who are having difficulty accessing the services that they need to integrate. And I think we shouldn't forget that these people aren't, you know, some helpless burden. Syria was a relatively stable and prosperous country until 2011. These are people with skills and education who will ultimately be able to make a positive impact here as previous migration have done.
I just want to bring Julia back in, and just on the point we were discussing earlier, Julia, and I'm sure this point has been put to you since you wrote that article, but I'm sure you can put yourself, if you were to put yourself in a Syrian person's shoes.
Oh, yeah.
You're desperate for help. You know, you can stay where you are. You need to stay somewhere. And I take your point certainly about perhaps cultural differences. I mean, you may have maybe inviting someone into your home who's a devout Muslim who needs the space and time to pray so many times a day. But
no,
the reality is people can adapt, though, can't they? People can adapt.
Elaine, I wouldn't have an issue on that side at all. For me, look, I'm not in the habit of opening up my spare room to complete strangers. And if that makes me a nasty person, then so be it. I will live with that. The reality is that most people in the United Kingdom would likewise do the same. And I agree with everything that Claire said in terms of, you know, less talk, more action, let's be realistic. But the point is, look, people leaving Syria are in a desperate state, no question at all. The problem is, are we just going to let them all leave? I mean, is the whole country, whole population of Syria going to leave and we're going to do nothing about it? Or are we going to tackle the reasons they're leaving, which is the Assad regime and also ISIL? And that's what we need to talk about. Because, look, the Syrian people who are coming to, you know, to Germany, to the UK, to France, they have passed through sometimes as many as, you know, five safe countries. Once they're in Turkey, they are safe. Once they're in Jordan, they are safe. Certainly once, you know, they're in Hungary, and yet they are passing through. Because for a lot of people, this isn't just about finding safety in the sense of asylum. It is about finding a new life and economic migration. Now, I support that they want to do that. I understand that they want to do that. And if I was in their position, I would do the same thing. The reality is, how many people does Europe, Northern Ireland, UK, whoever, propose to take? Because we are talking about
the question is really what should the UK do then?
I think the UK needs to tackle the problem at source. I think we should be helping the countries nearby, Jordan, Turkey, to be taking people. I think we should be asking major wealthy nations like Saudi Arabia that are very nearby and say, well, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. I don't see why it's Northern Ireland's problem and not Saudi Arabia's problem. If you look at a map, if you look at the all the other issues affecting people in Syria, I would suggest there are lots of countries along the way that should be doing their bit rather than Northern Ireland.
But that sort of action is very long term, isn't it? In the short term, there are people in desperate need. They're arriving. You know, what can be done in the short term?
In the short term, I think we should be helping the people in the camps and actually making sure that people have got the things that they need in the camps: education, food, water, you know, all the basics that we need. But I really don't think that saying, okay, everyone who's living somewhere they don't like, come to Europe, I don't think that's the answer.
Okay, well, Patrick's on the line. Good morning, Patrick.
Well, Lynn,
what do you want to say?
I listened to this before. You see, there's a thing happens in the world. A long time ago, there was another nation, and the people were refugees. They were actually Presbyterians, and everybody left this country. And they went to places called America, Australia, Canada, New Zealand, all around the world, and they were made welcome. And they integrated into these countries and became a force in them countries. And they were refugees and whatever I call them, and they went in boats. It took them 3 months to get there and to get there. Same way, sort of similar to the same way it's happening today, and yet it's all modern today. They can help them, you know, but once again, the big business comes in and says, we can't handle them. You know, the only time away back, and I'm 78 and I can remember, see, England at that time, they went over there, the Irish, and they had open the windows. No blacks or Irish shall fly. You know, so the English seem to be the ones blocking them again. The rest of Europe is now trying their best to solve a serious situation, to bring these people in, to integrate them. But don't you worry, the English will find a way of stopping them.
Okay. See,
I will give you
thanks,
money.
Thanks, Patrick.
As if money is the answer to everything. As if money is, oh, money. I heard it last night. I heard him saying, we give $1 billion. Who gives a hell will I give $10 billion? It's not money. People need a home to go to. They need help. And that's what I'm saying at the moment. I keep listening to this, and I can remember the Irish. I'm listening to the stories of the Irish going to Canada and everywhere else in the world and being accepted. I remember the Pennsylvania Indians helping the Presbyterians when the winter came. I read all that in our culture.
Okay, so we're going to have to leave it there, Patrick, but thanks a million for your call. Julia, did you want to respond?
I think, yes, we have seen a massive wave of migration from Ireland to many other former UK colonies. And we have actually seen a massive wave of immigration to the mainland of the United Kingdom as well. And a lot of these have been very successful and some have been less successful. And the reality is that the economic migration is what it is. It's economic migration and we shouldn't confuse it with what is going on with Syria.
Okay. Green Party Councillor Ross Brown has contacted the show. Good morning to you, Councillor.
Good morning. How's it going?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us. What do you want to say?
What I texted into the show was really that, you know, taking in families might not change the world, but it will change the world for those individuals. And I think that's the most important way to look at this. You know, we ought to be doing what we can to help people and not treating this whole situation as if it's a problem just for the collective. We've got to look and see what we can do for individuals. And the reality is here in Northern Ireland, over the last 5 years, we've had more people leaving than coming in. So we've had net emigration. And the other question I think needs to be addressed here, you know, if these people were white Christians, would we be so quick to reject them? And I think that underlying a lot of this is a racism and a sectarianism, and we really need to tackle that.
You convinced, Julia?
No, I don't think it's about that, because these problems have happened in many countries overseas, and we haven't acted. And Yugoslavia, when that was happening, there was a lack of action, certainly from the EU for a long time, and they were Europeans. I couldn't care less what religion, what cultural background, what skin colour, anything anyone has. We're all human beings. But I'm saying that this hand-wringing, oh, you can stay in my spare room thing, it's nonsense, and it's actually an insult to the tens of millions of people who are in danger in Syria, Iraq, Afghanistan, Eritrea, many other parts of the world. We need to face up to the fact that we've got
people would take a very different view, but I just want to give the last word to you, Claire Hannah. What happens now here? As you were saying, there doesn't seem to be anything firmed up really at Stormont in terms of an action plan.
Well, I think just to say that I would agree with Patrick and your last caller, this is a moral duty. You know, we and people offering their homes really is almost a metaphor for offering space in the community. And it's also not taken responsibility off countries like Saudi and Israel and Iran to not just financially contribute, but to stop proxying within the region.
But it does raise a lot of questions, doesn't it? Because what if you have a scenario where, okay, somebody invites a refugee family into their home, but after 2 weeks they think, oh, well, we don't want you here anymore.
Well, I think
where do they go
exactly
then?
What we're saying, we need a more coherent plan. And I also want to say that we need to protect the integrity of the definition of a refugee. And Julia is wrong when she says, that people will, literally sit in the back of a fridge for 4 days or carry their entire family across a continent just to get a better job. So these people are refugees who are fleeing the entire breakdown of their country, and we do need to protect the integrity of that definition. But what I think we do need here now is for OFM and DFM to hopefully establish a task force, but certainly put in place a refugee integration strategy to support refugees and asylum seekers who are already here in Northern Ireland and who need support to integrate and to provide the services and to provide the funding that people need to, at a time when they need to move on with their life, be facilitated to do that. And in time, I'm very confident that they will make a positive impact in Northern Ireland.
Do you have a time frame for when this plan will be sorted?
Well, I don't. It's not my plan, unfortunately. I think OFM, DFM should be doing it right now if that work is going on, let us know that it's going on, and also make sure that the people like the Law Centre and Home Plus and Bryson, who are already providing, and Niacris, who are providing those frontline services, bring those people into the room. There's no point in having a plan if it doesn't involve and take the expertise of the people who are actually providing those services.
Okay, Jim's on the line. What do you think, Jim?
Well, first of all, I'm very, very annoyed, to be honest, and I'll tell you the reason why. They now want old age pensioners who have three bedroom houses, and there's only maybe one pensioner or two pensioners living. They want the pensioners to sell the houses, the large houses, and move into small houses, just to suit immigrants coming to the country.
Who's saying that?
It was in the paper 2 days ago, two weeks ago.
Nobody's proposing that, are they, Claire Hannah?
No, yeah, but let me tell you this. Whenever we had the EU, whenever they'd done things right, we had borders. Then all of a sudden it was decided to remove the borders. Now, what should have happened 3 or 4 months ago, maybe longer? The borders should be reinstated. You don't know who's coming into the country.
Jim, these are people that are running from war.
Look,
they are fleeing for their safety. These are people. No, let me make this point, Jim. These are people who are prepared to go into boats, make a treacherous crossing. We've seen what happened with that little boy. Children are dying. These people aren't looking for a better life or benefits. They want to be safe.
Now, tell me this, dear. Whenever those boats took off, apparently a number of the people on board had a mobile phone number that whenever they got so far out to sea, they were to ring it. And that was for...
But sure, how do you know that, Jim?
Well, it was reported.
Okay, Julie, you come back in there.
I'll ask you a question. How do you know that everything you're stating is true?
Me?
Thanks for that, Jim. Julia.
Well, yeah, look, it has been widely reported. And you have to remember also that when the German authorities have actually been, actually taking Syrian refugees in, or supposed Syrian refugees, they've discovered that some 25% of those claiming to be Syrian aren't Syrian at all. You have to face the fact that a lot of what's going on, we've got a lot of different people being mixed up into the mix who are not necessarily fleeing persecution.
Dolores is on the line. Good morning, Dolores.
Look at the logistics. 73% of them coming are young men. An English, a Scotsman, a Welshman, an Irishman would start the fight for their home. Only 15% are women and the last percent are children. Now that young boy, Ellen, that died, his father came from a job in Turkey. He took the two boys and their mother. It was his responsibility to take them. His sister in Canada had been sending him money.
He said he didn't feel safe there, Dolores.
What you are getting is an influx of Muslims. Just the logistics alone. Irish families that have maybe two or three children.
But what does religion matter if people just want to be safe?
I tell you what it is, because it's another Muslim influx. Over the past 1,400 years, Spain, Portugal, Italy, the whole lot had it. You'll see the crescent and the star above every church by the end of the century. You cannot change the logistics.
Claire, do you want to answer that point?
Well, I mean, the things that your caller before that was saying that were reported, they might have been reported in the BNP newsletter or something, but those, I mean, it's a distraction to talk about these people, you know, being Muslims. Not that that should make any difference, but in fact, Syria was quite a secular country before the last 4 or 5 years. But it's going to be on a needs basis. And yes, at the moment, the amount of people at, for example, Calais are young men, because it's probably common practice to send one unencumbered young man over who will hopefully maybe set up and be able to bring a family in with him. But actually, the people coming to the UK, David Cameron has indicated that they will be coming from the camps. And I would like to think that it will be needs-based. It's not just the first people who reach the borders get in. But again, people have a right to have aspirations and hopes and dreams for their families. It's not just as soon as they reach a safe shore, they have to set up in a camp there. People have a right to want to go to a country like Germany and perhaps like here, where they will be able to integrate within a community, where they will be able to get work, where they will be able to set up a business. Okay. And it's really outrageous to say that we will or won't take anybody based on their religion. And it's also outrageous to say that people don't have that entitlement to want to have a safe and secure future for their family and not just the immediate few weeks. But I think we need to go back.
Gerard has a point, actually, Claire, he wants to put to you. We have a caller, Gerard.
Want to remain in Syria and want to go back to Syria.
Gerard's on the line. He has a point he wants to put to you, Claire. Good morning, Gerard.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hello.
You have a point you want to put to Claire Hannah.
Yeah, I would just like to say that I know a lot of people are attacking Assad, that he's terrible, but he protected Muslims and Christians and Azeris. And okay, I'm not saying it was perfect, but there was some type of order in that country.
Sorry, Jared, what are you saying?
I'm just saying on this immigrant crisis at the moment that, you know, I think most people out there, and I'm one of those people, and I know it's not politically correct, but I would like to see more Christians and Azeris coming in.
But it's on the same point again, and I put that to Dolores. What does religion have to do with being, you know, being safe? Going to a country where you know that there's not going to be bombs outside your door every, you know, every day.
Well, my concern is that the Christians and the Azeris are a very small minority in Syria, and they're camped around Damascus, so they're getting attacked by ISIS.
Okay.
You're getting supported by the Saudi Arabians.
Okay, just to put that point to Claire Hannah,
can I just make one last point? So why do we have this mass of, you know, Islam? Surely they should be heading towards the ISIS territories and Saudi Arabia. Well, surely we should be seeing the Christians and Azeris coming
through. That's where they're running from. Claire Hannah, is this, Jared made up a point there, is that maybe reflective of what some people out there are feeling?
Well, look, I think it needs to be needs-based. It doesn't, to me, it doesn't matter if they're a Christian or a Muslim. If they're a family and a person in need, that's what we're going to do. And it's not about opening borders either. This is always going to be happening in a controlled fashion. And the fact is, you know, we're an island on the periphery of Europe. People, you know, there aren't floods of people coming here one way or the other. But I just think it needs to be needs-based. It's not. I'd be delighted to welcome Christians or Muslims or whatever faith, but it has to be on the basis of people needing sanctuary and us having a coherent plan to offer it to them.
Can I just say one thing?
Mm-hmm.
Just declare, with all due respect, the Christians and the Azeris, I'm not an expert in that area, but I have a general idea. Mm-hmm. They're a minority in that region, and we should be giving priority to them.
It'll be needs-based, and if people are suffering a particular persecution, then absolutely they'll be made welcome. But I think there are systems, and there should be systems in place to make sure it's on the basis of need.
Okay, we're totally out of time, but thank you very much, SDLP MLA Claire Hannah, columnist Julia Hartley-Brewer.